Healthy Family, it's Dr. McManus, and we're here with our monthly health sciences call. We hope everybody's having a great March. We are almost to the Ides of March. Tonight, we are actually going to have a potpourri of delectable topics, all centered around healthy eating and our favorite topic here at Health Sciences and here at Shackley in general, and that is nutrition. So we have a number of topics we're going to try and cover tonight. Joining me on tonight's call is your Vice President of Health Sciences, Les Wong. Hi, Les.
Hello, everybody.
March is National Nutrition Month. And this is actually something that was founded by precursors of the American Dietetic Association 40-some years ago, or almost 40 years ago, I believe, and was initially a National Nutrition Week. But because nutrition has, you know, become so much more important, and there's so much greater understanding as a result of population studies and other clinical research as to the benefits of good nutrition, the benefits of supplementation as part of good nutrition. And so we now have the government and many experts recognizing how important nutrition is by declaring a whole month. And of course, our perspective is that you don't want to focus just in March on good nutrition in your life, but clearly all year. Because the better you eat, the healthier you will be. There is absolutely no doubt about that. So we're going to talk about kind of some of the top myths and misunderstandings about food and nutrition in general. We're going to talk a little bit about American Diabetes Association Day, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, and take that opportunity to kind of talk a little bit about diabetes in general and a few other hot topics that we're going to cover. And then we'll be opening it up, as we always do, to Q&A at the end for whatever hot nutrition questions you want to ask, and we have a couple of our own that have come in through health sciences and medical affairs that we want to take this time to educate everyone about our perspective. So let's get going. So let's start out by talking about eating healthfully, and one of my favorite topics, from as my children can attest to from their youngest days, their youngest memories probably, is that the dinner plate, and actually all the plates, but in particular the dinner plate, has to be very colorful and has to have multiple colors of the rainbow on the plate. And, of course, the reason for that is not just to have a pretty plate, but in reality to have a healthy dinner. And just so you know, some of the health benefits that are associated with those colors, because the colors of fruits and vegetables are indicative of the phytonutrient content of those fruits and vegetables. And each of those phytonutrients confers, as we now know with the ongoing emerging research, each of those phytonutrients confers specific health benefits. So the green of things like broccoli and some of the dark leafy greens indicate tremendous antioxidant potential. It can actually help promote healthy vision. Think of spinach here especially with its lutein content, and also a reduction in cancer risk. The orange and deep yellow fruits and vegetables, those yellow bell peppers, for instance, and orange bell peppers oranges themselves. Carrots contain nutrients that also help promote healthy vision, help support healthy immunity, and also reduce the risk of some cancers. Common theme with cancers here, because we know that antioxidants help your immune system function properly and recognize abnormal maladies in your DNA and in your cell structure that can ultimately lead to cancers. Purple and blue options, things like blueberries and eggplant and grapes, also have antioxidant and anti-aging benefits and can help with memory, urinary tract health, and also a reduction in cancer risk. Sorry to be boring about the reduction in cancer risk, but it is the number two cause of death. And in fact, over 500,000 people in the United States will die of cancer this year. Red indicate like tomatoes indicates produce options that may help also with a healthy heart. Lycopene in tomatoes is very well known for this, healthy vision, immunity, and also reduction in cancer risks. And then the white, tan, and brown foods, things like mushrooms and onions and garlic and things like this contain nutrients that also promote heart health and help reduce cancer risk. So You know, the message here overall is obviously to eat a variety of colorful fruits and vegetables. If you ate just blueberries all the time, you would have the great health benefits associated with blueberries, but you would be missing all those other health benefits associated with those other types of fruits and vegetables. So vary your choices. You know, spend some time in the produce aisle. Take some time, you know, to look at recipes. It's really, really very important, not only for your health, but also just for your enjoyment of eating. You know, eating should be a pleasurable experience. And so, you know, I've certainly gotten, you know, back into cooking a lot more over the last couple of years, which is actually quite enjoyable. I really strongly urge people to buy fresh produce as much as possible. That's the most phytonutrient rich produce that you can consume. Try to buy organic when you can, just because we know that has reduced pesticide levels in our organic produce as compared to conventional types of produce. When you can't buy fresh, frozen or canned are reasonable options. With the frozen vegetables, you want to look at just fresh frozen vegetables. Nothing should be added. You don't need anything added, just plain frozen vegetables. Same thing with fruits. They can be fresh frozen, berries, peaches, things like that. Or some, it's okay to have the added juice, but I don't really think that's necessary. I prefer just to recommend just the fresh frozen, plain fruits and vegetables, and then use them in whatever you're going to make them in. Canned vegetables can be a tremendous source of salt, so look for the no salt added or low sodium versions, and you can also rinse them. Pour them into a little colander or strainer, and then just, you know, run some water over them. So nice Shaklee, best water, of course. And then whole grains. You know, people get a little confused about that. Whole wheat bread is basically white bread. So you really want to look for whole grain versions and think of some of the ancient grains, things like rye and amaranth and quinoa. Look for things that contain flax, which are nice sources of omega-3s along with your grains. And, you know, really, and even though this is a little blasphemous having less in the room, but we really do like to promote brown rice as opposed to white rice. I know, Les is making a face at me. And to really look at the ingredients because you on the labels, and that's something that, you know, Pam and I have been talking about in our Cinch Inspiration calls on a regular basis here over these last few weeks. But it is really important to become label readers, become knowledgeable and discerning as you are out there purchasing products that, again, are going to really impact your health, not only your enjoyment of eating and your weight, but also your overall health. Okay, how about a few other tips, Les?
Well, what I want to talk about first is your options with dairy products, and we think you should make the choices for fat-free and low-fat milk and dairy products. Remember, they're rich in calcium, they're rich in protein, they've got all the other essential nutrients, but less fat and fewer calories, so you've actually got more in the same serving size, you'll get more of some of these other nutrients. If you're lactose intolerant, try lactose-free milk or a calcium-fortified soy beverage or other milk beverage. They make a lot of different sources, rice, almond, other beverages for those who are looking for lactose-free versions. Also want to mention your protein choices and what to look for in terms of protein choices. You should eat a variety of foods each week from protein groups like seafoods as well as nuts and beans and legumes, as well as lean meats, poultry, and eggs. We'll talk about lean meats later on in the call. Look for plant-based proteins, nuts, beans, whole grains. These are wonderful sources of protein that are not traditional protein sources here in the American diet, but very helpful because not only do they tend to be lower in fat, lower in no cholesterol, lower in calories, but they've also got additional nutrients, antioxidants, dietary fiber, that can help, you know, confer a whole host of health benefits in addition to the high-quality protein sources that they are. Other things are soy foods. There are other soy sources and soy foods than the typical beverages and so forth. You can look at tofu. You can look at Japanese food is very popular, very trendy these days. Edamame is the little soybean snack that you can not only get at Japanese restaurants and stores now, but you can pick them up at your mainstream grocers and big box stores and so forth. and they make a great and fun snack. They're actually great for kids because the kids can pop the little beans out of the little, you know, the little shells, and they can
have all sorts of games with that. Yeah, I've already. Yeah.
You may have to pick them up off the floor and so forth, but it's worth it if you're getting a little extra nutrition into your kids. It's a good option. At least twice a week, if you can, try to make fish and seafood the protein on your plate. You know, we like the fatty fish, like salmon, sardines, mackerel. Sometimes these tend to be the stronger fish options, but they're very, very rich in the omega-3s, and we all know how helpful and beneficial the omega-3 fatty acids are. And a great way to get them is by increase your intake is by having more omega-3 fatty acid-rich seafood on your plate on a regular basis. You want to try to keep your meat and poultry lean. So we're talking on poultry, you're talking breast meat, skinless, a whole host of ways to make that. You want to look at pork, beef, lamb sources that are lean portions. You want portions well trimmed, and more importantly, you want them reasonable in size and small portions. And 3-ounce portions are fairly small portions compared to what you're going to get when you go to your typical fast food or fast casual restaurants that we typically...
I like that.
Fast casual. There are some very, very common ones.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm not going to start naming restaurants, but some of the big common restaurants... Advertised on television where the portions are probably more in the 12 to 16-ounce range for meats instead of a 3.
Enough for a whole family.
Or a smaller portion. Or you can do as my ancestors and we typically do with the Wong household, which is take that amount of meat, then slice it up into thin pieces and stir fry it with mainly green and colorful vegetables such that you're getting meat almost as a condiment or complement to your plate, which is typically full of the whole grains and wonderfully colorful vegetables as well. Cut back on sodium and cut back on empty calories from solid fats and added sugars. Instead of drinking sugary drinks like regular sodas, we talk about how I believe 25% of our calories these days now come from sugar. And it's not because we've all developed these wonderfully sweet tooth personalities, but it's because the sugar content of our beverages has gone up so high and the portion sizes of beverages have gone up so high, think big gulp, that we're consuming many, many, many calories from our beverages, and they're empty calories, and they're calories that are causing a negative impact on our health. From potential of tooth decay and other issues to excess calorie intake and overweight and obesity and diabetes and metabolic syndrome, and there's all these risks associated with that. So instead of sugary soft drinks, fruit juice is probably a better option, but you can still get a lot of sugar from that. So we are really looking for water, dairy beverages, other tea-type drinks, and things that are typically water-rich and sugar-low and can do what they do best, which is to quench your thirst when you need to hydrate. Compare your sodium intake in foods and choose those with the least amount listed on the labels. We all need to be better label readers. We don't have to read and interpret everything, but we need to be able to spot calories, calories from fats, sodium, things like this, and look to avoid some of these things, as well as artificial preservatives and colors and flavors and things. Learn to look for these in ingredient decks and to avoid them. If they're hard to pronounce, they may be more than you want to take in your foods. Season foods with spices or herbs, or at least instead of salt, or at least taste your food before you throw the seasoning in and see if maybe it's adequate already. That's right. Experiment with
all those great spices out there.
Experiment first. Select the lean cuts of meat and poultry, fat-free and low-fat dairy options. Use heart-healthy oils. Not all oils and fats are bad. When you look at olive oil, canola oil, etc., these things actually can have some benefits when used in moderation and can do wonders for flavors and mouthfeel and palatability and taste, and they add some real sensory value as well. So using them in appropriate amounts and manners is the way we recommend. Cook more often at home. I'm glad that Dr. Jamie's cooking more often at home. I've been a long-time cook for my girls at home. And,
when my kids are in college and gone. And so, you know, it's just cooking for one is not that fun. But now I'm cooking for two a lot. That's a little more interesting.
There we go. So cooking is great. It's healthful. It can be peaceful. And it can be a great, experimentation and having fun with it. And make sure, we haven't talked about it, but make sure you're getting out and exercising. That's another important part of the equation. Find something to do for 10, 20, 30 minutes a day. Exercise on a regular basis, and that with good nutrition and having that very healthy plate are going to help you improve your chances for living a long, long, healthy, and wonderful life. And now back to
that
Dr.
is
Jamie.
What we are all about here, right, Les?
Yeah.
And so now we've given you all sorts of good advice. We thought we would take some time to dispel some of those common myths and misperceptions about food and diets and dieting and that sort of thing. So we're just going to go through a few of these. Les and I'll go back and forth here a little bit. One of the myths you probably have heard is that if you have diabetes, you have to stay away from sugar. Well, that is absolutely false. And in reality, excessive sugar does not cause diabetes. All of our foods, proteins, fats, and carbohydrates are ultimately metabolized into supporting your blood sugar and or raising your blood sugar if you're consuming too many calories. Having an elevated blood sugar, which is diabetes, is from consuming excessive calories, period. So you do want to be obviously moderate in all of you want to control your calories such that you're losing weight, such that you're controlling your blood sugar if you do have diabetes. And it's best to be reducing all of your caloric intake and trying to choose the right kinds of fats and proteins and the right types of carbohydrates. It's really not the amount, it is the amount, but it's also the type of those macronutrients. So with carbohydrates, we don't want a lot of simple sugars. You need some simple sugar in your life. If you're eating fruit, as a diabetic, you can have one or two servings of fruit per day. You should really get most of your fruit and vegetable produce intake should be vegetables just because they have lower calories and lower sugar content. So sugar alone, even a piece of fruit on its own, has the ability, especially with the diabetic who's insulin resistant, to elevate your blood sugar and can potentially drop it rather quickly as well. So you need a balance of protein, carbohydrates, and fat. So, again, the sorts of guidelines we gave you here in the first part of the call apply very well here. But with diabetes, it's really about calorie management, not necessarily staying away from sugar, although minimizing your pure sugar like soft drinks and fruit juices are things that you, and sweets and desserts and those sorts of things are not things that you should be having on any kind of a regular basis if you do have diabetes. Now going to one of the other macronutrients, fat, eating a lot of fat makes you fat. Well, no, that's not true either. The reality is it's excessive calories that make you fat. You could be eating excessive calories of all good foods and you would gain weight. So it really is the overall caloric intake that your body needs. If you're gaining weight, you're eating too many calories. If you're losing weight, then you're going in the right direction, assuming you need to be losing weight, obviously. There's a lot of healthy fats that we do want to strongly encourage you to eat, and Les has mentioned several of those tonight, with olive oil and salmon. Nuts are also a very good source, almonds in particular. Walnuts are good sources of omega-3s, but again, they also are dense in calories. Fats provide 9 calories per gram, whereas proteins and carbohydrates deliver 4 calories per gram. So the foods that are high in fat, things like the fatty fishes and peanuts and peanut butter and almonds and avocados, these are things that are very healthy for you, but healthy in small amounts. So reduce your portion size of those, but those are really healthy foods to consume. And then to the last of the macronutrients, protein, eating more protein is going to give you big muscles. Well, we want to definitely reassure people that that is not true, since we have protein-rich drinks that we have in Shaklee, and I know that the women out there would not want to be using the Cinch products that was going to make them look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. They really, you know, want to look like Reese Witherspoon or someone like that. And that is the goal. And the reality is that if you're eating, you know, an adequate amount of protein, and especially a leucine-enhanced protein, which we very strongly believe in, to help help with, as you reduce calories, helping to retain your muscle mass so that you don't lose muscle mass. So we're, you know, you definitely can, if you increase your protein intake, you can build muscle, but it's not necessarily an automatic conclusion, because it depends on how much protein overall that you're eating. So you also, just eating more protein is not going to build muscle if you're not doing the resistance training and exercises that you need to do in order to build that muscle mass. So you need a combination of the dietary intake and the exercise. Okay, Les, I know you have a few myths you want to go through.
Okay, so here's one, and that is that muscle weighs more than fat. And it reminds me of, there used to be a puzzler question, what weighs more, a pound of feathers or a pound of nails? And you would think, well, nails weigh, well, a pound is a pound.
No.
The difference between fat and muscle is not in the true weight, it's in its density. And so basically muscle is denser than fat. So a pound of muscle is going to take up less space than a pound of fat. So if someone...
It's actually an intelligence test.
There you go. If someone is... that's what it was. If someone is lean and mean and very low percent body fat, maybe that person is going to be smaller. That person doesn't necessarily weigh less because they're going to be densely packed with muscle. And that's a good thing. And that's one of the reasons why... Our inch loss program, we don't focus just on the weight, because we want to turn people into sort of lean, mean machines, so to speak.
Lean, nice machines.
We want you to measure some other aspects of fitness and weight management, and thus the inch loss. Egg yolks are bad for you. Well, here's one. You know, they are a gold mine of nutrition. One yolk contains half your daily day's daily requirement of choline, an essential nutrient for the brain. And then it's controversial as to how much dietary cholesterol is actually going to affect your blood cholesterol levels. We don't recommend eating a three-egg omelet on a daily basis. We recommend moderation in all things. We recognize that eggs are a wonderful source of high-quality protein, a very, very economical source of protein, and so they make sense in any person's diet who chooses to eat eggs. But we believe that you want to go ahead and treat eggs like you would many, many other foods and protein sources, and that is to eat them in moderation. 8 glasses of water a day is the magic number. We've been saying that for a long time, but just like as with nutrients and calories, your hydration needs vary a lot for each individual. We love water. Here in the Bay Area, one of the trends we're seeing these days is that some of the newer restaurants, some of the trendier restaurants are offering not just bottled water and fizzy water, but they're offering tap water to you, and they're offering it in like wine bottle type, carafes and things. And it's a very sort of a groovy way to go. And we think it's a great trend because it's probably one of the healthiest drinks you can get. It's free. It's clean here, typically in the Bay Area, and we think it's a good trend to go. How much water you need depends on your size, your exercise, your activity level, and even where you live. So you sort of need to recognize your own thirst, your own sort of needs, how much you're consuming in meals, between meals, in foods, and in other drinks. If you're drinking Cinch tea for an energy boost in the afternoon, recognize that that's going to count as one of your glasses, quote-unquote, of water per day. So all these things contribute to water intake. You don't need to magically count for 8, but you want to make sure you're having enough to be well hydrated and then well energized as well. Then also be mindful of added sugars, be mindful of caffeine, be mindful of sodium, and you don't want to do too much of any of those things.
Okay. So back to the kind of dieting sort of things, to lose weight and avoid indulging. Well, this is kind of true and not true. Obviously, if you're eating a large bowl of ice cream every single night, along with all the all the rest of the calories you're eating, that may not be the best way to lose weight. But the reality is that healthy eating is really about a balance. And so there's not really bad foods per se. There can be bad amounts of foods. Certainly bad specific choices or just not a good balance of things. So and the research, especially the diet kind of research really has shown that when you restrict and when you limit, including when you just go on fad kind of diets that seriously limit a particular type of food, like the no-carb diets, which I'm very vehemently opposed to, because, again, the body needs all of those macronutrients. So when you restrict, you tend to then, have this psychological, urge build up, and which also may be a physiologic urge, because certainly I've seen people who have been on these very low-carb diets or very low-fat diets. Either one is not good, because you will tend to crave what your body is not getting. And so the best thing is to try to, really have a balance of all foods. Another misconception, I strongly believe, and you've probably heard Less's and My Biases tonight, is that healthy foods are bland and tasteless. Well, clearly, anybody who eats out at very nice restaurants and who may have even tried some vegetarian restaurants, imagine that. In fact, we had our health sciences Christmas party at a new trendy vegetarian restaurant in Berkeley this year. Yes, I'm converting my entire team, even my meat-eating friend over here.
Not completely vegetarian, but largely vegetarian. Clarify that.
Anyway, we certainly can make healthy foods to be tasty as well as nutritious, and I think that is an attitude adjustment that all people have, and I'm not espousing everyone has to become vegetarian, because you can eat healthy foods that clearly are not going to be all vegetarian. But you definitely, you want to get out the cookbooks, go wander through, your bookstores or go online and order some interesting looking cookbooks that sound interesting, and really explore the world of food and the world of cooking and the world of spices, and really, try some new types of vegetables you may have never cooked with before, some new types of vegetarian proteins that you may not have tried before. Make a homemade butternut squash soup. We recently made a butternut squash soup that we had black beans with lime and things you would think would not go together. It was one of the best soups I've had in a long time. Another myth is eating, and I love this one, I answer this one all the time, eating after 7 p.m. will make you gain weight. Well, no. Sorry, it's kind of like the sugar is going to cause diabetes. No, that's absolutely false. It is not when you eat the calories. It is the number of calories you consume in the course of the day. You could have them all after 7 o'clock at night if you didn't eat before that. But of course, we really do strongly encourage people to put their, to balance, to divide their calories, not balance, but divide your calories out over the course of the day. You're going to have the best time, the easiest time, eating the right amount of calories for you if you eat small, frequent meals throughout the day. I'm a firm believer in grazing more so than big meals and eating a breakfast, a lunch, a snack, and a dinner. At least people should eat a minimum of 4 times a day. So don't try to turn your life into a pretzel to try to finish eating by 7 o'clock. There's absolutely no science to that whatsoever. And then finally, my last myth here I'm going to talk about is the fact that carrots are high in sugar and you should not eat them. Well, I'm also a strong advocate of carrots. I think carrots are a very very good nutritional food. There are actually a very large carrot stick has about 30 calories. It's about 85% water. And a whole pound of cooked carrots, which is a lot. That is a pile of cooked carrots. Actually only will give you 3 teaspoons of sugar, whereas an average soda is something like 8 to 10 teaspoons of soda, or of sugar, rather. So these are, rich in fiber. They're rich in beta-carotene, vitamin A. They actually can help you with overall blood sugar balance because they are actually a pretty relatively low glycemic for vegetables, low glycemic type of vegetable. Okay, back to you.
I have never seen a person overeat on carrots and become overweight, obese, or diabetic.
I think that's very true.
That's good.
I used to love carrots in medical school, and at one point in time I was eating so many carrots that I actually had the palms of my hands and my tongue actually was a little bit orangish. And all of my fellow medical students thought I had hepatitis. It was hysterical. It's the classic medical students overdiagnosing each other. We all, you know, first or second year of medical school, you're diagnosing everybody around you with dreaded diseases.
A minor little side effect there. I'm going to finish with just one more myth, and that is that ground turkey and ground chicken are always better for you than ground beef. Non-vegetarian that I am. The truth is that ground turkey and ground chicken can be made from cuts of any parts of the bird, including higher fat, dark meat, and skin. So that can be a concern. Ground beef comes this way as well, but the advantage, if there's an advantage that can be had with ground beef, is that it typically is labeled with percentage of fat, whereas ground chicken and turkey are not necessarily done that way. So in this case, the decider would be that a 95% or extra lean ground beef might be much lower in fat than some of the ground turkey that you might pick up typically from the grocery refrigerated section. But for the leanest meat, if you're looking for something that would be labeled ground turkey breast, you're probably doing yourself some good by getting a very, very lean, efficient, high-quality source of protein if you're looking for ground turkey breast.
Okay. All right. Okay. Let's go on to another interesting topic here, and that is diabetes. Clearly, that is, you know, a nutritionally related disease that is clearly, you know, there's a genetic predisposition that leads an individual to ultimately develop diabetes, but it is completely 100% type 2 diabetes is related to your overall caloric intake and your weight. So the American Diabetes Association has deemed March 27th, or this year, which is essentially going to be the every fourth Tuesday in March going forward, as Diabetes Alert Day. And they are really strongly encouraging Americans to take the diabetes risk test and to determine whether they're at risk for type 2 diabetes. We're going to talk about that here tonight so that all of you on the phone can take some notes and to be thinking about people that you care about in your life around you, your family, your friends, your coworkers, et cetera, who may be at risk for this very terrible disease that is completely 100% preventable. Type 2 diabetes is 100% preventable by virtue of maintaining a healthy body weight and a healthy caloric intake. It is also reversible by virtue of losing weight and improving your overall dietary intake and adding exercise, etc. So diabetes is a serious disease. There's over 26 million American adults and children who are diagnosed with them. There's an additional at least 70, estimated to be a 79 million or approximately 1 in 3 American adults who are pre-diabetic, which means that they have a blood sugar level or blood glucose level that is higher than normal, meaning higher than once you get above 100, then we are, as a fasting blood sugar, we are concerned about your risk for diabetes. And so we want that tells us that your cells have become insulin resistant, so that the normal insulin secreted by your pancreas to metabolize glucose is not working. You know, that whole system is not working appropriately, and your circulating blood sugar gets too high. And when it is above 120, then you're into the diagnosis of diabetes. And as the numbers climb from there, or as they are on average higher than 120, it's essentially toxic to your tissues, damages your blood vessels, and causes inflammation in your arteries, in your cells, in your body overall, affecting your immune function, your digestive function, your heart function, your brain function, et cetera. It's a very devastating disease to have, with multiple complications. It's the number one cause of kidney disease, stroke, amputations, and blindness. So these are all, you know, even though there are other reasons why these conditions can occur, they are largely connected to diabetes. So the first diabetes risk test took place last year. Over 600,000 Americans took the risk test. The American Diabetes Association is looking to top that this year. So we really do want to encourage people to, you know, if you are overweight, if your BMI is above 25, you are potentially at risk. If your BMI is above 30, you are definitely at risk for diabetes. If you've been told that your blood sugar is elevated, if there's a family history of diabetes, as we get older overall, and certain ethnic populations, African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans, Asian Americans, and Pacific Islanders are all at increased risk at a lower BMI than Caucasians for the development of diabetes. So these are, you know, again, anyone who's overweight, no matter what your ethnicity, you are at risk. But if you have these, are of these ethnic derivations, then you are even at increased risk. In particular, Native Americans and African Americans are actually at significantly higher risk at lower BMIs. So again, let's get out there and get tested, talk to people about diabetes, and obviously we have a great weight management program to help people who are trying to lose weight and have been told by their doctor how important it is for them to lose weight, especially if they have elevated blood sugar. All right, let's celebrate dietitians.
Okay, so the last thing we have on our agenda tonight before we go into the Q&A session is that we want to go ahead and acknowledge and celebrate Registered Dietitian Day, which is actually today, March 14th. We especially want to give a shout-out to our own favorite registered dietitian, Pamela Riggs, who has
Hello,
the night
Pam.
Off tonight. Who
we
has
gave Pam the day off because she, or actually the night off.
The night off.
She is a registered dietitian. She should be home cooking a great meal and enjoying good food as all dietitians should.
But we want to give a lot of props, a lot of support, and a lot of applause, and a lot of accolades to Pam for all that she does and all that her fellow dietitians do around the countries. Well, what is it that they do? Well, registered dietitians are the food and nutrition experts who can translate the science of nutrition into practical solutions for healthy living. They have degrees in nutrition, dietetics, public health, or related fields from well-respected accredited colleges and universities, and they've completed their internships and passed a registered dietitian examination. RDs also use their nutrition expertise to help individuals make unique positive lifestyle changes, and Pam is certainly one who promotes and supports that effort. Registered dietitians work throughout the community at hospitals, schools, public health clinics, nursing homes, fitness centers, food management, food industry, university, research, and private practice. And registered dietitians are the strongest advocates for advancing the nutritional status of Americans and people around the world. So we want to just go ahead and give thanks and recognize our registered dietitians and our own registered dietitian at Shackley here, Pam Riggs. So thanks for all you do, Pam, and your fellow dietitians around the world.
Absolutely, and that was a lovely acknowledgement and appreciation. And so you can all send in an email tomorrow and tell Pam how much you appreciate her. Okay, so we actually are going to go to the Q&A portion here tonight. We want to have plenty of time to answer whatever nutrition-related questions and nutritional supplementation-related questions. We obviously have focused tonight's call on nutrition per se and not on nutritional supplementation, but because we know we're going to have lots of conversation about that. But we are, as we go to the Q&A portion here, going to talk about one of the more common questions that seems to have come in over this last few weeks that we wanted to address. And that is, a lot of people out there in the field are seeing this kind of rating of multivitamins and a particular multivitamin site, I think, called multivitamin.org. And so we wanted to spend a little bit of time. Officially this is the end of the operator. This would be the end of the recording.